What's going on, guys? Firstly, just want to say thank you so much for tuning in for today's episode. I just wanted to start the episode off with a little bit of an introduction. So Zach here was a really good training partner of mine during the COVID season, during the pandemic, back when we were in Long Island and everything was shut down. We were able to find a undisclosed location in what we call the black basement, where we were able to get some really good training. And that was a really important time for me, because when the pandemic originally started, I wasn't able to really train. And I was going through a lot of other things outside of just training that were really affecting the way that I felt, the way that I thought, the way that I was just carrying myself and living life. And to get that opportunity to train when it wasn't easily accessible was a sacrifice, and also something to be grateful for, an opportunity in which we were able to capitalize on. And we trained a lot together, and it was definitely a very special time for all of us. And so I wanted to have Zach on here because I think we're gonna have a really good conversation. And you know, we always had great back and forth competition style rounds. We both have since competed several times, and we're definitely going to jam up about some competition experience and overall just have a great time and have a great conversation. So sit back, relax. If you are out there driving or living your life while listening to this, then we really appreciate it and enjoy the podcast.
All right, man.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, baby. Let's get going.
Yo, what's up, good? Yo, man, chilling. I'm happy to have a conversation with you, man. The fucking Jewish better, man. Your Instagram profile every time makes me fucking laugh. Like every day, whenever I see you with that filter on and you're just like going off, it fucking kills me.
Man, that's all I want to do is bring some joy to people, give them some good advice, try and make some shekels.
Yeah, right. So talk. What do we want to start off today's conversation with? You want to talk about some shekels here?
Oh yeah, man, we could talk about shekels. We could talk about like the start of like how I got into being the Jewish better and why I'm the Jewish better. So yeah. I could start off, man, honestly, I could tell you the whole thing. So I started betting. Originally I was at a party, right? And there was this guy there, and he would ask me every week. I'd go to like a bar, and I would go to like this person's house after every week, where we would all meet up in the hometown where I grew up. And this guy, he would get me to, he'd say every time, like, play this poker game with us. I'd say, dude, I don't gamble. I'm not into that. You know, the Jew in me didn't want to gamble. I just didn't want to give away one single shekel.
You don't want to give away any money.
Any money. I don't want to give away any money. Exactly. So this guy, I'm interested in the girls and stuff, you know, because I like the woman. And I get to the point where the guy keeps asking me, he said, I'll give you $10, play the game. I played the game. I wound up being every single person, right? And I was hooked, dude. I was hooked. So then I showed up the next week. I won and beat every single person again. And after like 3 or 4 weeks, I was like, dang, dude, I don't really know how to play poker, but I got a knack for this thing. And like, it could have been.
You never played poker once in your life.
I'd never played poker, but I knew the rules because as like a young kid growing up in a Jewish household, everybody plays poker. They all gamble. Damn. They, you know. And I kid you not, I remember my parents used to play for like quarters, dude. They'd have quarters on the table with all their Jewish friends, and they'd put the money in, I swear to God. So I knew what each hand was because I'd always ask them, but they wouldn't let me join in the game because I was just too young, you know?
Yeah, you just love the stereotype, huh? You love your own stereotype, but just exaggerating it.
I mean, you know what? The Jewish people know, man, because we all are the same. End of the day, we're all people, but we love what we love, man. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's why we need you in our corner, you know?
Absolutely. You know, we're all people, and that's the thing, end of the day. If you're a good person and you're doing good things, then it doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Christian, Muslim. It doesn't matter. You're going to go to and receive your reward from God if you're a good person.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. So now how did that start transitioning into, like, I guess, sports betting? Is that what started to come into it? Like,
so here's a way that I could really put it. I started off wrestling when I was a kid, a wee kid, right? And I wrestled a lot with my brother. My brother was a good wrestler. He started in high school, very athletic, strong kid, you know, could lift incredible amounts. So the strength was a real factor. Plus he's 8 years older than me. So that made a difficult challenge for me as a young kid. That's a
role model right there, at least, or someone to push you.
Yeah, man. I mean, he beat my ass every day. It was great, you know. But so I started, you know, wrestling as a young kid. I would wrestle with my brother, and I would watch these UFC games, right? I was so interested in the UFC as a kid. I remember, you know, watching Chuck Liddell, Anderson Silva, those guys. I mean, I remember it clear as day. And I realized that, like, I always thought of it as wrestling. You know, when the person's back is on the floor, 1, 2, 3, you're pinned, and it's over, right? So when I saw that they were on their back and the match wasn't over, I was like, hey, what's going on here? That caught my attention right there. That caught my attention. I was like, what is this guy on his back doing? Like, I'm used to being in that spot, you know, because that's where my brother
is trying to get out as fast as you can.
Exactly. And it didn't stop after, you know, I was pinned. My brother would beat me up some more. So it was kind of, you know, the same thing. And it was cool, dude. I saw like Lyoto Machida and people like Damian Maia getting submissions off their back and stuff, like Anderson Silva with that sick triangle on like Chael Sonnen. And I was like, dude, this is awesome. So I'd play the games and I'd learn the moves, right? My brother, he beat my ass every day. But I remember there was this one day, right? I might have been like 11, 12 years old. There was this one day where he left his arm hanging out, right? So I put him in a triangle and he got out of it. But then I took his arm and I armbarred him and he said, tap. And I ran around the house, dude. I ran all around the house.
And is this just from watching UFC, not even like actually learning how to do an armbar, right?
I had no clue how to do an armbar. No idea.
I love that because I think that there is something to just watching things and like visualizing it or becoming interested in it, or at least like mentally engaging with an activity. I think even just that can make you actually apply things to like real life scenarios.
Absolutely. And like as a kid, especially with that mindset, you don't have all these negative like affirmations in your mind that people give to you. You know, you're like focused. You like see other people do it and you know that you could get it done. So yeah.
You don't have the same doubt when you're a kid. You can just like curiously do anything and you just like do it, right? Try to keep that young mentality like as much as I can, just for the curiosity's sake, not getting stuck in like a bubble.
Yeah, man, that's what you got to bring it out of you, man. That's what I do with the Jewish better. You know, I act sometimes like a fool, but deep inside, that's me, you know?
Yeah, that shit's hilarious, though. But what eventually got you started in, like, officially training jiu-jitsu? Was it, like...
Okay, so we could continue. This all links together, actually. So this is great. This is perfect. So I, as I said, I was a wrestler and stuff. I got into high school. I started wrestling. After that, I never caught my brother again. He beat me up until I got into high school. I got into high school and my brother, he stopped wrestling at that point. So it was me versus these other people. And I'll tell you what, dude, I was about 132, right, as a freshman. And here's where I might have been a really good wrestler up until that point. But once I got into high school and I was in varsity facing these big, giant seniors, you know, that's where, you know, you're not even a theory. It's just a fact. Strength matters, man. And
yeah,
these people are just grown men compared to me. And I got my ass beat, dude. I think I lost every single match my freshman year. Every single one.
Amazing how big some people go from like eighth grade to ninth and 10th grade. Where like, are you like an adult? Like, are you like one of the teachers? Like, no, I'm fucking like 14.
Bench. Yeah, man. And these people were like 18, you know, they were seniors. And I look some of them up now and they were like, I don't even feel embarrassed losing to them. They're like, number one at Princeton, which is one of the best wrestling. Like, I look this guy up and he's like a hall.
I think you got muted there, bro.
Yeah, this guy's a national champion.
Now I look back, and as a young kid, though, it messed with my mentality. I wanted to play basketball. That was my favorite sport. I wanted to play basketball. And as I came along, I think my sophomore year, I just was having arguments with my coach. I wasn't doing the best. I was pissed that I was on the varsity team, but he would wrestle me up like three weight classes sometimes, just to give some people like easier matches. That was like basically feed me to the wolves. Yeah, exactly. So as a kid, you know, I got pissed with it. I dropped out of that shit. I never was like, I thought I was good enough to make the basketball team, but I just never had the confidence to try out. Like if I didn't make it, it was no big deal. but I probably should have just tried out. I mean, I got to the point where I was like dunking and stuff. I was really athletic, and yeah, it fell off for sure. Like as soon as I found the poker, I like thought, you know what? I mean, I'm not going anywhere with an athletic career, right? And I want to like, I have a good mind for this
stuff.
Were you
still doing poker? Were you still doing like things like that around this time?
What's that?
Were you still doing poker around that time?
So I got it around like I was 18, right? I got into it. That's when I got introduced. And like after high school, you know, there's no sports. I didn't go to college or anything. So I needed something to do. And poker almost seemed like a way for me to get that competitiveness out of me almost. Like I could beat you in a mental game, you know what I mean? Rather than maybe use my body. My body's not
especially for- like for like most guys, especially, but everybody has like a sense of like what, like wanting to challenge ourselves, wanting to better ourselves, wanting to like test where we are in anything. And also too, like wanting to like whatever the case is, fuck some people up.
And there's, for sure.
It's 100%. Just something that we all thrive on. We want to fuck some hunt. Like deer and shit with our bare hands and just get out there. Like
human instinct.
Yeah.
Man, it's crazy. So I actually started getting into like online poker because, you know, I wanted to test my game versus these people. And I actually wound up the first day I got it $50 into like $1,000. I'm like, dude, I must be really good at this thing. You know,
every time you start.
Every single time, man. And over the years, it evened out. You know, you play with higher skill as you go along. So you realize, you know, the game advances as well. I just caught it at a good time for sure. And I'm continuing to get better as I go along. But there's so many things I get involved with now. So it's crazy. But I started on an 888 poker app. I was doing tournaments. I was winning tournaments, which is like you put up $10 to win X. You know, I literally was using my mom's information to gamble illegally as a kid. And check this out, man. My brother, he did fantasy football. So I got into that too. You see all the commercials, DraftKings, fantasy football. Mm-hmm. So once I turned 21, man, it was like I won money every single football season. I won money off poker. I was basically paying all my – I was going crazy, man. I'm not even going to lie to you. I was buying things I should have never bought, you know. Mentally, like as a kid, that could really mess with you, man. Like you get that air of confidence for sure.
Yeah, so, you probably have all this money and you have nowhere, you have nothing, that you have to spend it on, right? Like fucking rent and shit.
Nothing. And I wasn't mature enough yet either. And I thought to myself,
I've been there, like early business success and being like, wow, this is like the most amount of money I've ever seen in my life. And you like, don't even know what to do. It's like,
it's insane.
It's like a high.
I've seen it go, and it's happened to me before. So when I introduce people to gambling, like I see it happen to other people too, man. It's crazy. And they win, like I've had people start with me and win like $5,000 in their first like 3 weeks, you know? And then they're like, they love it, man, so much that they start, you know, going off on tangents. You know, some people, it's like, we've never seen that kind of money. So to be able to make it online, it feels good. And like, it's almost like cryptocurrency, you know what I mean? But you got to know what you're investing in. You have to stay non-emotional, and that's when money can be made off of stuff.
And I also think there's a point of investing what you're willing to lose.
Absolutely. Some people, they, you know, I get messages all the time like, hey, I lost my like kids' fucking college money. And I'm like, hey, dude, they're like, what play should I do today? I'm like, none.
Go get a job.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. So yeah, I like the, basically, a few months after I turned 21, like I went through a breakup. I was pissed off. I was depressed. I was getting fat and out of shape too. I had won a bunch of money doing a Borgata poker tournament where the guy paid me $1,000. I took first place. He said he'd been playing for 11 years and never won a trophy. This is my first ever live tournament, and I won the whole thing.
Some people have it with anything, right? Like just some people have it, and some people don't.
I was very research, man. And as a kid, especially in poker, people underestimate you. You're 20, like, look at this, man. This is a baby face, man. I probably looked younger than this. So, and I probably smelled like a lot of pot. So they're like, this kid doesn't know anything.
So, I remember. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the research that you were doing? That's very interesting. You weren't just going blind.
So I would watch a lot of poker videos. I'd watch it's very relatable to jiu-jitsu. Especially like you have to keep a poker face. Like think about it, if you're in a deep heel hook, it's the same thing as a deep bluff. You have to keep a poker face. You know what I mean? So it's really crazy, man, how many relevant like things there are compared from poker to jiu-jitsu. I remember like this, there's a lot of videos I'd watch, right? And I would look up hand rankings. There's so much info on Google, I think people don't realize, but they just don't know the correct info to look up. There's stuff like ICM, which is like basically a formula in tournaments. Like if the payout's XYZ, you play a certain range of hands. So your opening hands, like say you have ace, king, ace blank, you have a range of hands, and hand ranges is very important too. Because people think it's just whatever hand wins. No, it's if you know what your opponent has, then you could win every time. So I'd focus mainly on figuring out what my opponent has through context clues, through the way they're betting, through the type of person they are. It's almost like a research game. You could really get a lot of info just by looking at somebody, what kind of person they're going to be. Because we show it on our face all the time. We show it, you know, think about it. You get a first impression of somebody, and that's usually pretty accurate.
You do jiu-jitsu competitions, right?
Absolutely.
You go up, you got called, you're about to pull up to the matches and your bracket's sitting out ready to start. You can look at them and say, okay, this guy's going to be like a guard puller. This guy's going to be a wrestler. Like almost right away. This guy sucks right away.
Absolutely.
It's so strange. If you're in tune to like the way humans are, like, and you are paying attention to people's behavior, it's almost like 85% of the time I can like almost, I would be willing to bet what style of jiu-jitsu that person has.
Absolutely. And it comes into also being unpredictable yourself, which is relevant to jiu-jitsu as well. And so this is going to trip you out even as well. Think about the skill of a black belt versus a blue belt. Or, you know, how many times a black belt could beat that person, right? In poker, it's really the same. You probably beat them most of the time, right? But there is always that chance that that person catches you. There's always. It could be as minimal as possible, but your skill level really determines how much you're going to win over time. And it really shows. It really does show. You know, and you don't know what a person is until you play with them, until you get a history of them, really their skill level. Because honestly, it's also the same, because there's not a lot of professional poker players out there, just like there's not a lot of high-level black belts. And then there's high-level, like the professionals of the professionals. And that goes into almost everything, like golf, whatever, man. Like there's the elite of the elite.
Yeah.
And that's just untouchable.
And it's also like it really shows itself in things like poker, jiu-jitsu, because of it's such a small scale versus like football. There's like all these teams, right? There's all these professionals, right? With jiu-jitsu, poker, something small, you can pinpoint it like really quick where they're at.
Small community.
So, eventually, what got you then into like jiu-jitsu?
Perfect. So I'm a poker player. I'm not getting any exercise. I'm smoking cigarettes, I'm smoking a bunch of weed, drinking a lot of alcohol, and a lot of other things that I'm not probably too proud of. But you know what? I like took control of it, man. I was always into jiu-jitsu, like I said, man. So I looked up, I remember watching Boogie Martinez and his brother, right? And I remember Gary Tone, and I watched a lot of these guys' videos. But I remember specifically the name 10th Planet. And I was like, yeah, if I ever see a gym like that, I'll stop by. I couldn't believe it was right in my hometown. I drive up the street one day and I see a giant sign. It says 10th Planet. I said, you know, this is a sign, dude. I'm fat. I'm out of shape. I'm depressed. And I got a talent for this thing, man. I have almost an advantage that I wrestled and, you know.
And it seems like you were already gravitating and interested in the sport itself before you ever even trained, which is for most people, that's not really existent. Like most people, they discovered jiu-jitsu by like randomness. Like for me, it was literally like one day after I broke up with this girl, I wanted to just like be better. And I was like, I've always wanted to learn how to like fight and protect myself. And I literally Googled MMA gym and just went to the first one. And I just signed up. And that's what I found out jiu-jitsu
was. You just got to get in there. And that's what I needed to do, man. I remember as a kid, like I joined an MMA school or something, but thinking back, man, the techniques on the jiu-jitsu were like laughable. Like, I remember some of them and they're very laughable. Like it was nothing I was learning, but I'd get into like street altercations and I'd be able to like think like, all right, if my brother's beating me up, like these people aren't going to beat me up. And I've like got people in arm bars and stuff, stupid stuff. So I was like, you know what? If I could do it to like
an average person. Let me walk into the jiu-jitsu gym. I want to see, like, because you hear stories like, man, like, you know, you're going to get your ass beat. You know, you're going to get your ass handed to you. And yeah, I got my ass handed to me. I think I got tapped, like, I can't even count the amount of times I got tapped the first day by everybody and people that weren't even like half my size. It was just the coolest thing. It's the coolest experience in the world, man. And I showed up literally every single day after that. I wanted to do this, man. My coach, Chris, he got me really into it, man. Such a nice dude too. One of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And like, I would sit there hours after classes talking to him. He's let me stay in his gym. Dude's one of the nicest people you'll meet, and really took me under his wing. So I can't even thank him enough for that.
It seems like you really got on the grind, like right, almost right away, as far as like trying to learn.
So he tells me, right, I wanted to compete. That's because I wanted to avenge these losses I had from wrestling. I wanted to prove to myself that if you give me like a decent rule set where it doesn't end once I'm on my back, like we keep going, I'll sweep you or something. And I like the stuff that I was learning. I didn't know a lot, but he said, yeah, if you want to do this competition, Zach, you got to get to 155 pounds.
And what were you?
I stepped on the scale. I go back and look at the pictures. I was the most I ever weighed. I was 195 pounds. This was December and the tournament was in February. So I had to figure out a way how to lose this weight because I was gonna make the tournament.
That's a big drop.
Over the next 2 months, I worked as hard as I could to show up every single day, drink as much water as I could, eat as properly as I could, and sure enough, the weight started coming off pretty good. You know.
Okay, so just to make sure I heard you correctly, you started in December, and then your first tournament was what, 2 months later?
February 23rd. I started December 25th.
Okay. Wow. So first 2 months. That's
and I just started.
So tell me a little bit about like some of the behavior changes that you did to lose 40 pounds and then kind of like put that into like what it was like first walking into like the competition.
Discipline, bro. And that really helped me for my first competition. The discipline I had to do to cut the weight. And I think it was good for me, man. There were certain days where like I ate like very minimal, but for the most part, I got as much nutrients as I could. I had to look up like a lot into diet and things like when to eat my carbs, when to like go into ketosis, when to like how much water I should be drinking and like at what work rate should I be working out and like what intensity. So a lot of running, a lot of cardio, and a lot of like I would get in the sauna a lot, dude. I would sweat like all the toxins and bullshit out. I did, but I didn't know like diuretics or nothing, just good diet and exercise.
Was there anything that you stopped doing that you felt was really like hindering you as a person?
Yes. So I started meditating. That was one of the things that I remember specifically started helping me. I was taking
that's like the best thing anybody can ever do. I believe that entirely. Like that is like the number one habit that everybody should do.
Absolutely. And that's why I love watching your videos. So check this out, man. I
appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. I was eating a lot at night. That was my main problem. And that was one of the things I had to notice. Like once I start to snack at night, it doesn't stop. I just keep eating and eating and eating. And that's just like, I think everybody has that problem, right?
I would say everybody that has like, because it might be, I've done so much weight loss stuff and I talk to people and it's really interesting because there's always an ambivalence around it. So like, I'll give you an example, right? As let's say I'm talking to somebody, they want to lose like 40, 50 pounds. And I'm trying to go into like what their behavior is so we can focus on getting it changed. Right. And it's always the same thing. It's like, you believe until you're really faced with it, right? Until you get stepped on the scale and your coach tells you to be 155, you live in this like bullshit world where it's like, I don't really eat that bad. I try to eat like whole foods and stuff. And then I would say, okay, well, what about at night? And they're like, oh, well, yeah, I eat like 4,000 calories at night. And it's like, okay, well, let's work on that first. I don't think it's the snack you had at lunchtime. I don't think it's that. I think it's this. Yeah.
It's the late night, man, and that'll do it for you. It's the worst time that you could eat anything because it's right before you go to sleep also, and in sleep, you know, like you burn the most weight. So, I mean, that's the thing. After that, I started competing up, though. Like, I didn't really want to keep making 155. It was kind of like a one-time thing. I had a great match, man. I did a finisher sub only.
Nice. You started right into a super fight?
It wasn't a super fight. It was an open.
Oh, okay.
A finisher's open and a white and blue belt. And I think Brandon was in the division, right? But I didn't have to face him or anything. He was in the division, and Matt and Carlito were also there. And, like, I rolled with them before. Like, super nice people were helping me and stuff. I was even trying to hit some of the moves that, like, they showed me in the match. It was cool, man. And, like, I knew, like, it was cool. Just I wanted to avenge my losses from, like, when I was a kid in wrestling. I knew I was going to go out there and, like, just put on a show, right? And, like, the match starts. We were wrestling and stuff. And, like, halfway through the match, the dude gets my back. And the guy has my back full hooks. I have no idea what I'm doing. So, I get on my hands and knees. I think the ref even thought I tapped. I didn't tap. The guy has like the full rear naked choke in. Guy's like a blue belt, I think, at a Henzo Gracie school, Henzo Gracie, New York. So right off the rip, I'm going up against.
Going against like one of the probably like one of the better blue belts in the area.
Yeah, I was going up against the killer. So you know what I mean? He's squeezing on my neck and I'm thinking in my head, like, I'm not going to tap out. So I did the only thing that I could think of. And you're going to laugh here, man. I stood up with him on my back, right?
Oh, and, no.
I started to walk into the crowd because my thought process was so much that I didn't want to tap that I thought if I walk into the crowd, they'll stop the match shortly and restart it because that's what they do in wrestling. So I thought the ref is going to stop it. No, the crowd starts pushing me.
They back. Move out, right? They like, and they let they it go. They started
pushing me. They pushed me back onto the mat. Oh. And so then I started going back down, right? And I'm feeling the choke, dude. This is like 30 seconds in now, this guy has my neck and he's squeezing, dude. It was bad, man. I think he was just like, at this point, his arms were gassed because he's squeezing so hard. I got through it. And I remember there's people in the crowd like, he's gonna go to sleep. Like, I remember one guy screaming, he's gonna go to sleep. And I'm like loving it, dude. I love, like, this was great way to start out, man. Trying to peel the hands, do whatever I can. And you see everybody, like, there's black belts over there rolling. There's another black belt over there rolling. And they're, like, mad because nobody's paying attention to them. They're, like, looking at this crazy guy getting choked out on mat one, his white belt. And, all I thought to my head was, man, I need to hear, like, some type of time. Otherwise, I'm going to go to sleep. And then I heard at that exact moment, I heard one of my coaches say, like, 30 seconds. Or
stay on.
It was like 10 seconds, but it was really like 20. And then time goes by. I get out and it goes to overtime. I wound up like losing because I thought it was three overtimes. It was only one overtime and the guy got like the better escape time. Like the
better time or whatever.
Yeah, dude. And I was like, whatever, man. Like the whole place was like clapping, dude. It was a great feeling, man. Like even Matt and Carlito came up to me like after, like, yo, you're crazy as hell, man. I don't know what's good.
That's savage right there. Yo, I definitely want to talk about that crew at some point, and we definitely got to chop it up about the Black Basement because those were legendary times. How did you originally meet them? Did you meet them at like 10th Planet or something?
Actually, one of my friends that I was training with brought me there, and it was just me, Matt, him, and another guy. And this is the first time I ever got to roll with anyone outside of my gym. You know what I mean? So, like, they were super cool about it, man, because I know they could have, like, now looking back, they could have whooped my ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're super good, but also know how to work.
Exactly, man. And they were helping me, like, answering any questions I needed. It was great, man, dude. Honestly, like, I was cool to meet some friends, but I didn't really, like, get close with them and, like, talk to them. But we, like, knew each other. I had him on Facebook. I would talk to him through there. And that's basically how I met them, was through that guy. And then at the tournament, we saw each other again. And they were like, that's, I think, when they remembered, like, oh, man, this kid's crazy. It maybe just stuck out to them.
Yeah. Well, that's why everyone's looking at you guys and not the black belts.
Yeah. And then, like I said, I was training at the 10th Planet gym, and it shut down because of COVID. I think that happened to, like, a lot of people, man. Yeah, gym completely had to shut down, which it is what it is, man. COVID, like, shut out a lot of gyms. I mean, plenty that were, like, big gyms even. So, it happens, man. And I didn't have anywhere to train.
Did that 2019 of December, is that when you started?
2018.
Oh, okay. So, you were trained. Did you do any competitions after that finishers before the COVID shutdown?
Yeah, man. I went through like I did one, two, I did like three, four matches that next year, tournaments and stuff. Not much success in the beginning, but as I went along, I took second technically in a tournament, but I felt like I took first. It was the one match I lost was a ref's decision. And then the other three, I subbed the people in like 30, 40 seconds, each of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, I felt like I was training every day. Like, it was getting to the point where I needed to take that step up in competition. But just like money circumstances, man, like, I think that probably happens to a lot of people too. Like, I couldn't really afford going to all these competitions back to back to back.
Yeah. No. So the competition fee can get freaking expensive. Sometimes it's like 125. Like
expensive as hell, man.
One for like one or two matches sometimes.
Yeah, and that's why I thank my coach. Like, he wouldn't charge me any crazy amount, man. Like, he worked with people, and that was a good thing. That, like, that's something I really appreciate about that gym too, is because he didn't care, but he just wanted you to come train. And that's how I felt with like Matt too, man. He just wants you to come train. That's all he's asking.
We just want to work on getting better. Like, that's that was one of the great things about that room, like over the quarantine. Now, did you, when did you wind up getting your blue belt?
So after those tournaments, it was like a month later. I was actually like sick, dude. I had mono. I couldn't train or anything. And then, I just still showed up, man. It was like, it was a good learning experience for me, because I had to watch.
You're still watching.
Yeah. And I had to break down the moves now rather than actually do them. I had to learn them. I was helping other people with it, like the beginners. And trying to just succeed any way I could, even with like my problem, because they say like when you have mono, basically your spleen could like explode at any, like with any contact. That's like happened to like people like Sam Darnold and stuff.
Wow.
Jets quarterback. Yeah, like he had mono, he couldn't play because for like 7-8 weeks, man, even longer sometimes. So I had to take like 3 months off almost. It was crazy, man. And getting back into shape was really rough. So like once I got my blue belt after those tournaments, I didn't really get to compete for like another year or so, honestly, until just recently. I just started competing again.
You got the blue belt before mono?
Oh, it was after, man. It was basically like after I got it, during that period where I couldn't train due to the contact thing. And my coach said, like, you're showing up, you're doing good in competitions, like, I think you earned this, man. And it was a great moment, man. I fucking appreciated it.
What was that feeling like?
It was great, man, because it was a lot of tough times, like cutting the weight, like starting. Like, there was a lot of points where I could have said, nah, I don't want to do this, or I could have just been lazy. I could have not showed up to that class. I could have not put a 20-pound sandbag on my back in 80-degree weather and run up and down the hill. Like, he had us working, man. And it's like when you go through, like, tough stuff like that with people, man, it could build a bond, man. Mm-hmm. You get close with them. So it sucked, man. I was really fucking beat when like that gym had to shut down, man. COVID was like fucking everything up. I got fired from my job, and I wanted to make money, man. And I wanted to train jiu-jitsu without having to worry about it. And that's when I got bought over there, right? I got two there, and my friend actually bought, the same friend that introduced me to them, bought me there, and he never came back.
Yeah? Oh, okay.
He never came back after the first day. So it was basically like he dropped me off there. And that's why the joke is I'm a 10th planet spy.
Oh, now it makes sense. Okay. Wow, you got brought there. And what was that first session like over there?
So I was really interested in like the Lachlan Giles stuff at that point. So I had like nobody to train with at that point. But I was still looking at it. And I would link up with – I had mats at my house that my old coach gave me. And I would train it with my friend Dino at at my house, basically. I had my own place, like before COVID, and I was putting down the mats and stuff, and we would train that stuff. But I was doing videos, right?
Yeah, you're just trying.
I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And then when I went there, I saw them working. I was like, cha-ching. Oh my God.
Yeah, cha-ching, right? When you start seeing when they throw the foot behind and you're like, yes.
That's what I want to learn, man. And I was so happy, dude. Like, I think it was just immediate joy, especially because, like, it went from such a shit, like, oh, fuck, man. Like, how am I going to train? Like, this is something I need to do to, wow, I have all these beasts to train with. You know what I'm saying? Man,
those were some of the craziest sessions ever. I mean, I know that was like for me the first introduction really to like the backside 50-50, first introduction to like being calm in leg lock situations, you know, because we had a very like fluent style when we tried to roll with each other where we could like work with each other, which by the way, I went to Ambush, Matt's place, the last time I was up in New York. And they did not roll like that at fucking all. We went to war, like every fucking round. It was crazy, man.
It was a different intensity.
Yeah, it was crazy. His students are fucking good. Like those guys that just got the blue belts, man, they earned that. Those were some crazy rounds. I'm sure you know.
I think Ant could be really good, man. I don't know. Did you get a chance to roll with him?
Yeah, Ant and I think it's Demetrius.
Demetrius is good. He's a good wrestler.
Yeah, Anthony definitely stands out for sure. I think his jiu-jitsu is getting better on top of his wrestling.
And Corey as well, man. Like if Corey could stay healthy and keep doing his thing, bro. Corey
cannot get hurt.
I would like to think everybody from those training sessions in the basement will go on to like do great things.
That was a good squad. I remember I went there first originally with Deagle, with Rob. Mm-hmm. And I remember like it was like 3 months into the pandemic, and like I was just fucking like I don't want to say depressed. I was like sad. I was like sad. Like I missed training. I didn't feel like myself. I was like I couldn't even lift weights. I was like doing pull-ups at the park, and I was like, this shit is such bullshit. Like there's caution tape everywhere. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
It's fucking retarded.
Yeah, and then he winded up inviting me over there, and it was like I started rolling with you guys there, and it was like those were like I can't even like I'm trying to like even find words for it. It was like a magical time.
It really is, man. I think rolling with Deagle like and all of them just like really upped my game to think about things. And even before I met Matt, like my friend would tell me like, "Yo, Matt showed me this," or like they showed me this, and it would make me think like, "Yo, what else is out there?" Like simple stuff like, yo, trying to take the back off of like leg locks, which isn't a new concept, but for someone that's like doesn't know about it or is like still new to those concepts, it's opens up like such a huge part of your game.
Those were a lot of light bulb moments, right? During that
time. Fucking dude, I could name so many people in there that like just gave me good roles, like Alex, bro. That dude's guy's a fucking gargantuan, man, and he'll play down to your level too, like in the training room, such a good training partner. He'll teach you, he'll show you stuff. Matt is such a good role and so technical with the leg locks. Carlito is like perfect role for me every time. He gives me like trouble because our body types are so similar.
Carlito's a good partner. Yeah, I really like that environment, especially like not just technique and stuff aside. I think there's
personality,
the attitude of the room, the non-fear of like, oh, I hope I don't show you something and then you go show other people. Like there was none of that, man. Like everyone just wanted to share technique. Everyone wanted to just improve. And I really look at like, especially since I've been to a lot of different like jiu-jitsu gyms now, like if I ever get into like coaching situations or like, just leading anybody in a group, like my big thing is like not having that judgmental feeling that I'm sure we've all felt when we go into a gym and you kind of feel like an outsider or such like that. I don't know if you have any experience with like cross training on like a basic level you can kind of like talk about.
I mean, yeah, definitely, man. You go to other gyms, like I've had points where it's like I do like a move and stuff and like the coach will tell me not to do the move. Like, I don't know if you've ever had that. Like, basically, I didn't even, like, go for a heel hook. I just did, like, Ashi to sweep the person. And they're like, no. No, you can't do that. And it's like, bro, what? Like, what? If you're going to say that, I don't even want to train here. It's like, I want to learn. Mm-hmm. And give me the best learning to my ability. As long as, like, you're not injuring people or anything, I think you should be able to do, like, leg locks. It's the same as cranking a full-on arm bar on you.
I agree, but it's the same thing. Apparently, you know, wrist locks are okay at like white belt level, which doesn't make any sense to me, but not a toe hold, which does still like it blows my mind how that doesn't make any sense. And then just the actual like, because I had this experience when I first moved, was I was at a gym that was like, man, I caught a heel hook, and it was like the fucking like Satan just came into their gym to raise hell. And it was interesting too, because like there was a lot of people wearing like Future kimonos, and I was figuring like, this is dope. Like they all know and are aware of like probably leg locks and stuff, like that whole squat thing. But no, there was still an attitude as far as like anti-leg lock. Now, to kind of comment on it, I'm sure you can probably agree, like I think it's better if we learn everything so we have safety with it, rather than doing things irresponsibly outside of like direction or authority. And also, like, if someone does it to us, we know not to like panic and turn the wrong way. Like,
absolutely. I've trained leg locks ever since the first day I walked into the gym. I think maybe it was like the second or third day we started doing that. And I remember one instance, this guy walked into the gym and he's like, I'm a purple belt. You know, I think I should be a brown belt though. He says that to my instructor. Mind you, my instructor's a brown
belt. Whenever someone says that, you know they're like a blue belt.
It was ridiculous, man. And I'd only been training for like 3 months, but it's funny because, you know, my instructor's only a brown belt. So it's like not even like he could promote this guy, you know? And I remember I rolled with him and I didn't even know what I was doing. I knew we just learned this. And I just did single leg X, right? So single leg, knocked him over, ankle lock. And he's like, tap. Like, I had no idea what happened. As soon as I grabbed his foot, and I remember him walking out, and it's just like, we were like, man, that guy said he was a purple belt. Like, what the hell? Like, he doesn't even know like how to defend a straight ashi. And I just learned that move like today. Like, we just learned that. So that caught an interest in me right away. Like, all right, if people aren't doing this and like this is somewhat new to people still, like I want in on it, regardless of how late I am on it.
And it's crazy too, because I think nowadays there's definitely more of it going around. More people are aware of it, but I still think that there's like a good 85-90% of people that either like ignore it or believe that it's like the devil or believe that they like don't work.
But then, yeah, they definitely work.
Yeah. I had my last competition, I did like a toe hold into a knee bar style.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I was really happy with my performance there because it was very flowy when you looked at it. But when I hit the toe hold, the entire bristles of the top of the guy's foot just like snapped. I remember hitting it and I was like, and he didn't tap. And I could tell after he didn't tap, there was like a weakness to him. Like,
oh yeah,
it like really hurt and he like limped off and he like put himself. He put himself into ice and stuff. And I was just thinking like, you know, the idea to say that's either ineffective, like, yeah, he didn't tap, but I weakened him.
Yeah,
personally, that's his fault. And then I was able to catch a knee bar, which he did tap too.
Yeah,
that, you know, you could get really fucked up there. But and it was funny too, because he was like off into the corner with some ice and my mom was there because she moved down here too. And she went to the competition. We had like a big squad there and she walks over like right in front of him. And she's like, Jay, where's that guy's foot that you hurt? I want to see if he's okay. And he's like right there. And he's just like, she's like screaming across the competition place. Like, it was just hilarious. I was like, mom, get over here. Like,
yeah, I want to invite my mom to like a competition or something, man. But I have a feeling it could just be embarrassing because she doesn't really know what's going on. I remember I showed like a video of one of my matches and like, I think I was in like a good position and she's like, and I'm like, Jewish mom. Nah, I can't do it.
Dude, she was at one other competition and it was kind of embarrassing both times really. Cause it's like the entire time as I'm rolling, I just hear like, get him. Like, and I'm just like, you're stressing me out. I'm trying. Don't put pressure on me. It's like, there's a lot of pressure there for sure. So, now, have you done any competitions like as of recently? I know you did.
Yeah, I did one last week. I did a Naga. Check this out. I went 1-1, but I feel like I won both on points, but it's like the weird Naga rules. I actually went back and watched the match. He gave the guy like a point for like a, so you know, a punch choke is like a super white belt move, right? Yes, exactly. And he did it from like my closed guard and the guy gave him a point for that. That's not gonna work. That's not a submission. So, man, I mean,
ref serves is unbelievable.
So check this out, man. I probably shouldn't have done this, bad idea, but like as a competitor, man, I feel like especially I think I was doing intermediate at that point, like you, heel hooks are allowed, anything could happen. Like, so yeah, I looked up at one point to look at him because like, and he's not looking at the match. So I said, hey dude, like you got to pay attention. And after that, I think I had 2 points, right? And then for the same submission attempts that I was doing, like, I guess, you know, I have a guillotine. He fights my hands, right? That should be a point for me. And he just stopped giving the point. He literally would shake his head no. And he just wouldn't give me points. And at the end of the match, like, kid grabs my arm from, like, guard again. And he, like, gives him a point for a Kimura. I'm like, all right, whatever, guy. I made sure the next match, like, I completely dominated the guy. I mean, totally to the point where it was, like, no question.
It highlights the point of like how important it is to get the submission.
For sure, dude. And honestly,
win if they submit.
I feel like for me, like since I'm still new to this and like I haven't competed in a while, it was more so like I was worried to see how like I would survive, how my cardio would be, and like see if I could really just get out there and compete and also not get injured. Like I saw 3 people get injured before my match. That wasn't the best like thing to psych me up, especially since I had like, this was a busy weekend for me. I had to go to UFC. I had to do all these things with my, like, other stuff. So it was more so, like, I was, like, trying to play a points game almost. And that kind of came back to bite me in the first match. But lesson learned. Got to submit the guy.
Yeah, no, there's definitely – I know you – didn't you do another competition before that too?
Yeah, I mean, look, I did one – but I only did one match. And, man, like, it was right after COVID, dude. I had, like, ridiculously no cardio. So as like technically good, I felt like I looked at some points, like there was still some things that I needed to learn and still some like physical attributes that I needed to take care of. My lungs just weren't recovered. And by the end of the match, dude, like I couldn't even get up, dude. It was great. Yeah. And then like watching, I thought I was going to have to like go to the hospital, dude. I was so fucking like basically drained because of like, I wasn't eating properly. I wasn't doing the correct things. And like now I'm starting to do that and really discipline myself. So I have to, like, otherwise it'll wind up biting me. But every – so I was, like, weak and stuff. I get back up, and I knew Matt had to compete, so there was no way I was leaving, you know. And he did really good, man. Like, he won his first match. And each time I feel like he got a submission, my energy level just went up and up. And by, like, an hour later, I felt great, man. I was glad I did it.
Like, it was undoubtedly. Right? When it comes to the – I feel like especially at, like, this level at where we're at, like, that white belt, blue belt level, like, I feel like – I really do feel like the most important thing is just, like, getting the fuck out there. Because at the end of the day, whether you win or whether you lose, not really – there's not much out of it. No one really cares. You know, it doesn't take away from you to lose. If you win, it's cool. But at the end of the day, we all want to win the tournaments that matter, the matches that matter, you know, when we're
probably – I just want to get better. I just want to get better, man. And I think like I could use that and along with like my sports betting stuff. And that's something like what we just created this in the basement. Like they were like, yo, you should do your sports betting stuff because you're winning money, but you should make like a page as like this Jewish guy.
Oh, and, yeah.
Because I didn't have an Instagram. You guys were all getting on me for making an Instagram. So that's when the Jewish better was born.
I remember you making the videos for the first time and I was like,
in front of Giant Stadium.
Like, just even – I remember you doing it while you were, like, on that couch, like, on Matt's couch.
Yes.
I was just like – I think it's hilarious. Like, we were – everybody was, like, doing that jiu-jitsu, and we were all trying to just work on things, like, outside that we could do because everything was just fucked, right? Like, if we really want to get to it, like, that summer was fucked. Everything was closed. There was no jobs. Like, there was literally nothing. Like, I lost work. Like, people, it was madness. So it was cool for everybody to kind of like begin working on little private things themselves. So how has the journey of being the Jewish better been, if you want to talk about it?
It's amazing, man. Like everything that I've said I was going to do, I've done so far. I said I was going to meet Dana White. I met Dana White. And I said I was going to like, you know, make these videos. I was going to meet all these people. I was going to get interviews with the fighters. And it's all happened, man. And it feels good, man. It's cool. And I like seeing you guys do your podcast stuff too. Like you guys motivated me to want to further myself and do the podcast. You guys motivate me to want to do better in jiu-jitsu and go out and compete more. So that's really what it is. It's a great group of, it's a great connection.
Yeah, sure. It motivates me as well, because when I see you posting, it always makes me think I should be posting. Like, it's that, right? And I know that we had very, very good rounds. We had very competitive rounds that I thought were, like, very, very productive.
Incredible, man. Like, I would go home and write notes on these things. And, like, you, Brandon, do.
Yes.
Just some of my best rounds because of the body types, the skill level, and just, like, getting pushed, bro.
Everybody was around, like, a similar skill level, but with different approaches and different games.
And then you got, you know, Deagle and all those people that are just, you know, even higher above. And then there'd be random people that would stop by that. Like, I remember some people, man, like, I'd be like, oh, yeah, what belt was that guy? Oh, yeah, he's a black belt. And it's like, oh, that's why.
Oh, yeah. And then you also have some rounds where it's, what's that guy's belt? He's a white belt. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, I remember I thought you were a purple at one point. Like, that's what I love about the no-gi and, like, what we were doing and the way that, like, our, like, that whole group's approaches to, like, jiu-jitsu is, like, not giving a shit that much about, like, the belt to the point of which it's, like, part of our identity. We're not going to let that hold us back. We're going to just keep trying to improve jiu-jitsu. And that's kind of what I really like about no-gi, too, is it, like, when we look at the mat, there is no rank. We're just going to roll.
Absolutely. And, man, there's black belts that I know, like, would get beat by purple belts. And there's, you know, black belts where there's no chance a purple belt's ever touching them. So it's a different, you know, it's really weird out there.
Mm-hmm. So tell us if you want to anything more about, like, the Jewish betting and being the Jewish
man.
Like, what's that journey been like?
So, yeah, dude, I do sports betting, and I made quite a bit of considerable profit over it in the long run. I try to bet small. I try to bet under my limits and try and constantly make, like, small investments. So basically, you know, I break it down on my page. You know, you take a certain amount that you're willing to gamble with, willing to risk, same as a stock or anything. And you have units, which is basically you have one unit, two units, a half a unit, and your unit is 1% of your bankroll. So your bankroll is that total amount. Say you have $500. One unit would be then $5. So you have three unit play would be one that you're a little more confident in. I would say you do up to three, maybe five at the most.
And that would be like $15 to $25.
Exactly. And then you could, there's different types of bets and different types of odds. So you can do, like, I think Ben Rothwell is going to win by submission, like he did this week. And you have a variety of reasons to think that. And if you think the probability is within that parameter, like, If it's plus 700, it means it has to happen one out of every seven times. He's got to submit this guy. So if you think through your research and your statistics, if that's possible, like submission attempts in the octagon, you know, but then you also have to look, like, this guy may have had five submission attempts in one fight. So that could be eschewing the average. So there's a lot of things that goes into it. And someone like me could break down all those things, could see that this person may have the striking advantage. They might use the longer reach to win the fight. I notice a lot of the times when it's going to be a striking match, like yesterday, like Rob Font versus Cody Garbrandt, the person with the straighter punches is often going to win. And it makes sense because they're there to get there first. And in an MMA fight, that's what matters. Also with, like, position over submission, that matters in jiu-jitsu, but more in MMA. And you saw that with, like, Tony Ferguson. And that's something, like, Rob taught me, you know, like that guy has no guard retention whatsoever. And, like, I wouldn't have noticed it. I would have thought, like, he has these cool bottom chokes, though. And, like, but no, he's giving up top position, and that matters. And he almost got his, like, leg broke, dude. It's no joke, man. And that's why position over submission matters. I see idiots talk about it. That's
really interesting in and of itself, because I think that there's definitely, you know, and this is, like, kind of unfortunate to say, but I think we all can kind of agree that, like, Tony Ferguson has dipped down a little bit.
Absolutely.
I always felt that. And this may be a little controversial, but I always felt that he was a little bit, like, overhyped.
Overrated.
For sure. He was able to catch some things, but ultimately, like, that's an interesting thing, right? This guy who everyone talks about is, like, this great fighter, and he is a great fighter. Yeah. He's obviously succeeded, but to see that he just gets his guard passed easily and he goes for these lower percentage stuff, and then you've all of a sudden you're going to go against a fighter who's not stupid, right? Who knows what they're doing. And
very high IQ.
Get fucking mollywopped.
that's what happens, man. And that's why I bet against these old fighters that are on losing streaks. People get emotional when it comes to betting. And that's one of the things that I want to talk about on a last note, is people get emotional when it comes to betting. And same thing in like anything in life. You get too emotional and it becomes a problem. Same with like, you know, Bitcoin or something. You get too emotional and you don't know when to go in or out, you know. And you have to just, you know, remain calm. It's the same with anything. Like, you don't want to be betting emotionally. Like, ah, I think, like, I like Tony Ferguson. He's got to get the win streak.
Yeah, back. That's not a good enough reason. Are there certain things that you don't look into before you, like, make a decision for yourself or for somebody else as far as where to place a bet?
Yeah, man, you got to look at the odds and you got to look at the probability. Like I said, like when I saw Bernil Dariush at -165, so that's, you have to put up 165 to win 100. I mean, that's insane to me because I thought like a lot of people had Tony as like a 50% win probability. So in that case, yeah, you would take Tony Ferguson because you're getting the plus money. So, you know, when you put money on him, you're getting X amount, but that doesn't always matter. You want implied probability. I thought Bernil's chances of winning this fight was like a 85% almost, barring Tony catching like a even more, like 90%, because like it was barring Tony catching a sub, and I didn't see him catching a sub on him. And the only way he's going to win is by finish. Tony hasn't finished, not going to say finish, but he hasn't knocked somebody out clean since 2014, I think it was. And that's not good, man. He TKOs people like how like he did versus Anthony Pettis when Pettis broke his hand. You look like that might have not gotten any better for him, but the end of the fact is Pettis lost the fight. He was winning round one. He dropped Ferguson, and Ferguson does like that weird roll. It's like you got to take all these things into account, not be emotional. You can't have favorite fighters in this because Tony Ferguson would be one of my favorite fighters, but knowledgeably, I had to tell myself that he's going to get shitted on this way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Who's on your radar now as far as like the type of people that you want to bet on?
Bernil Dariush is a great fighter to bet on. I think he's smart. I think he always gets the job done. Caitlin Chookagian by decision is always a great fight because she's so smart. She's not going to submit the person like all the time because her offensive jujitsu isn't the best, but she's in the room like with killers. So her defensive jujitsu is just incredible. You're not going to submit her.
I actually got a chance to train with her the last time I was up in New York because she was over at Sarah's, and I trained with Sherminari Kyle in wrestling. He used to do wrestling classes at the MMA gym I used to train at. So I'm definitely aware that obviously that's probably gonna get a little bit over to her. And obviously we watch her fights and she fucks people up. When I trained, I was very, very impressed with her skill. Like obviously like there's a big size discrepancy and there's a male versus female thing, but her technique, her movement, even her strength just felt really
focused. That's why she's so good.
Very focused individual.
Exactly. And she's just, you know, smart fighters, man. I always like the smart fighter, not the brawler. I want the person who's going to get the job done, knows what they need to do. And that's what Bernil did, man. He took him down. He looked good on the feet, but he knew my chance to take the least damage here is to get this fight to the ground and lay on top of Tony Ferguson and throw ground and pound.
I didn't even know who that was. I was like, who's this random guy going? And when he started just fucking him up, I was like, oh shit, this guy is good.
Okay. Yeah, and his, you know, black belt level.
Yeah.
You got to know and respect these people. And at the same time, like, it's hard, man, because, like, I get a lot of, like, love from these people. Like, you know, like, and then maybe one day I have to bet against them and they might see that. So it gets a little awkward sometimes. But, like, end of the day, I'm the Jewish bettor. I got to give the people what they want. They want to know who I think to bet on, what my reasoning is. And I try to do that the best. And just from
the most logical standpoint as well. I think it's very important as like, if you want to do anything as competition or as a competitor, to just be able to look at things logically. Like if I was to have a match and people were, even I knew were to bet against me, you know, I'm taking the chance to be out there and be a competitor and that's going to be okay. And like, you kind of have to be funny about it, right? Like I see bucks, I'm going to make y'all lose money. Like, you know, I think that there's a big thing as far as like with anything like sports and betting, whatever, is just like at the end of the day, like have a good time with it. Right. And not take
for sure. That's what I tell people all the time. It's just becoming, you see now it's just becoming such a huge thing and a huge part of sports. You even look now and you could bet on jujitsu matches.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I was able to bet on like Alex and Matt and all them on like
this app, Fight to Win. They have it, and you could bet on like the finishers this time, dude. Even the finishers event, you could bet on it. So I think it's becoming like a really relevant part, and all the worlds are connecting together. They need a face, right? You can't have these people that never have been in a gym in their life. And that's, you know, the people that you see on YouTube all the time, and they're trying to give out their info on these fights. Then you can't have, you know, the ESPN analyst that doesn't know anything. And, you know, you can't just have the betting guy, because they might, you know, like I said, they might have never even thrown a punch or known how to throw a punch. So you need a mixture of it. And I feel like I'm a good mixture of all that. I got a funny character. I think somebody's going to pick me up eventually, and you're going to see the Jewish better a lot more often. Awesome. I think I'm going to get back in contact with Dana. We got to talk about it.
And you obviously have skills, so it's easier to recognize when you know, when you're actually involved in the sport. So as we wrap up the hour here too, like, what are some of your goals? If you have any, like, if you have anything specific with the Jewish better to get out there, competition, like, what's next for you?
Absolutely. So my thing is, I want to do a competition like every single chance I get. Like this weekend, if there's a competition, I'm going to do it. If there's a next weekend, there's a competition, I'm doing it. And I'm like not going to stop training. And I'm also like going to start repping things a lot more. That's like one of the things that I think is very important, is just rep these moves repetitiously over and over and over and again, until like competing and repping the moves becomes like breathing to me. And then that's going to also help me like with my Jewish better stuff too. But focusing on that. And then also like, I want to help people make money. I want to show people that sports betting is profitable. And follow me at the Jewish better, at Jewish better. You put Jewish better, BETTOR on Instagram. I'm going to be also doing a show with R&B singer Anthony David. You can look him up. He's got songs with people like Questlove, David Banner. And I'm going to be doing like an MMA show, like headline style with him every week. We're just going to talk about the headlines, dude. And even then, I could give some of my insight on the betting. But I'm sticking to straight UFC. They're sponsored by DraftKings. Like I said, I think they need a face. And I think the Jewish better is the face.
Dude, let's see it, man. I love it. You're on the grind, too. You're very consistent. I think it could definitely be. So let's go ahead and follow Jewish better, guys. Let's make that money.
Make that money. And, man, I'm also trying to get my strength up there, man. That's one of the things I've been focusing on mainly. Trying to get my strength up, trying to eat properly. And it's definitely making a difference, dude. I feel like a lot more energized. I did not gas at the competition. I was not sore the next day. I felt like I could literally go again. And I've never felt like that after a competition.
What's your routine been like with working out?
So a lot of calisthenics, but I also been lifting. I've been benching. I've been doing curls, even the cardio. So I'm trying to keep it around 170. And, like, I think that's a good competition weight for me.
Yeah.
But I also want to be cut, man.
Like, you want to be a cut 170. You want to be, like, a fit 170, yeah.
Strong. I just want to be strong for my weight class. Because some of these people, you look at them, and they're huge at 170, man. Some of these people look huge.
I usually try to compete at 170. That's usually, like, my
favorite weight class. That's a great
weight class. My favorite weight class. I've recently done kettlebells. And been getting into like some kettlebell stuff, man. And
that's awesome.
Fun. If you ever get a hand on a kettlebell, I think that's like a good fitness tool as an athlete in the grappling for sure.
Yeah, it definitely stretch the shoulders. Nice
to, like, yeah, it, you know, keep your shoulders safe for sure. And I think that it was nice because you can bang out a lot of strength and a lot of conditioning in a very short period of time. So.
Yes.
You gotta try that
shit, man. That's fun. For sure, dude. I'm excited, man. A lot of good things coming. I want to go train at Holy Grail in Texas while I'm down here. I want to go to Deagle's doing a seminar June 19th. So I'll see him in at Henzo Gracie Austin. That's going to be dope. And I just plan on traveling, man. And I plan on going all over the place, maybe linking up with Bard, getting in the bus and doing some competitions, man. Spinning them like ladles.
Yeah, I'm with it, man. If we can get you guys over to South Carolina too, there's been like a bunch of tournaments over here. If you ever do a world tour or something like
I'm looking to make it up there.
Yeah. How is it in the South now? How long have you been out in New York, New Jersey area for?
So it's been like like a month now, and yeah, no, it's definitely different. Like, all the gyms are open, and everyone's like super cool about COVID and stuff. So I don't know how long I'm gonna stay down here, but I plan on doing a lot of traveling, brother. Yeah. Going from gym to gym. I'll definitely visit South Carolina. I want to visit Virginia. Maybe we'll do Virginia Beach.
Yeah, Virginia Beach. Virginia is a dope place too. I like the South, man. It's fun. I mean, it's so interesting how white people just don't give a fuck.
Exactly, man. And I'm gonna get me a big old strapper. You know what I'm saying?
Rain the shekels on it.
Yeah, man. Some shit's about to go down, and yeah, I want my ammo and I want my guns without them telling me like what the fuck I can and can't have.
Pretty sure you could just do whatever you want over there, man.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it, man. Fuck it. All right, brother.
Lady and heel hooker on the street.
Yeah, you should heel hook a hooker.
Exactly. That's why they call it that.
That's why, yeah.
Nah, this is great, man. If one day I could get you on my Instagram Live, that would be awesome, dude.
Any fucking time, man. I'm really trying to push this podcast thing. It's fun. One of my favorite things to do is just have conversations with people about stuff. And I like the theme that I've been applying here is we like to take ourselves through the journey from start to finish on jiu-jitsu. I got some interesting guests coming up. I got a later this week is a competitive like brown belt who's like from like Southeast Asia, actually, who I connected with on Facebook. He's going to be coming on. It's going to be we had Nick Ronan, we had Jeremy Paul Skinner, we had Rob Deagle, obviously.
Deagle's a beast. Ronan's a beast.
Yeah, we got Matt on there. So I want to keep just connecting with as many people as possible too, man. So
yeah, man. And I'll tell you, dude, get everybody on, man. It doesn't matter, jiu-jitsu, whatever, dude. Like, this was cool. We got to talk about this and like relate it into jiu-jitsu as well. Cause like, I'm a blue belt, you're a blue belt, but I feel like it's still, we're able to flow and we're able to talk about it. I haven't had a conversation with you in a while. I plan on messaging you, dude. I'll share like stuff with you. You share me some like strength techniques.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna post some kettlebell shit because that's been working that big time. I had a little bit of like it's called an intercostal strain. It's by like your muscles by your ribs, and it's been hard for me to lift really heavy. But I've been doing the kettlebell stuff, and that's been great as far as recovery goes, though.
Bro, keep doing what you're doing, dude. I think you're gonna be a beast, man. Like, with all the technique and the strength together, and you know how to like diet as well, man. Like, Once it starts coming together for you, and it is, man, like, you're going out and subbing people with leg locks when, like, in rule sets where, like, your main move isn't even allowed.
I had so much heel exposure every match, and I was just like, ugh. I was doing transition in rolls through to where I would catch heels, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, I can't do it.
Keep getting those submissions at this level, and then like once we keep progressing, man, like, it's gonna be great, dude. Like, then by the time, you know, we're allowed to do that, we're ready, you know,
we're ready to bang. I'm actually, you know what, man, I'm enjoying the time where I'm at now. I'm in no rush. I want to collect some medals at this level before I move up. So
that's the plan, baby. Got to get the gold, baby. Got to get the shekels.
Got to get the gold. Got to get the shekels. My brother, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate the conversation today.
I'm going to message you, man. Oy vey. Shalom.
Bro, you got to get your shit together.